can't buy me love, love, can't buy me love. I'll buy you a diamond ring, my friend, if it makes you feel all right. I'll get you anything, my friend, if it makes you feel all right. 'Cause I don't care too much for money, but money can't buy me love. I'll give you all I've got to give if you say you.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Richard Hassan, the Chancellor's Professor of Law and Political Science at the University of California, Irvine. He's a nationally recognized expert in election law and campaign finance regulation, and is co-author of the leading casebook on election law from 2001 to 2010. He served as a founding co-editor of the quarterly peer-reviewed publication Election Year Journal. And he's the author of more than 80 articles on election law issues, which have been published in numerous journals. His latest book is The Voting Wars, From Florida 2000 to the Next Election Meltdown. Welcome to Background Briefing, Richard Hassan.
It's a pleasure.
And clearly Citizens United had an important role in the results in Wisconsin, given the 6.5 to 1 or 7 to 1. It's difficult to get an exact figure on what the imbalance between the money that Governor Walker spent and his opponent spent. But there was a lot of out-of-state money, a lot of super PAC money. I think it's fair to say that kind of money wouldn't have been allowed under prior to Citizens United.
Well, you know, it depends on what the state's rules were before Citizens United, but certainly afterwards, you cannot have any limitation on independent spending, whether it's coming from individuals, corporations, or labor unions. The only limit that the Supreme Court's recognized at this point is the limit on foreign money. So we are in a different world right now than we were just a few years ago.
So would it be fair to say then that the Citizens United, where it allowed unlimited funds from both corporations to and labor unions, is that now sort of proved to be somewhat disingenuous? Because it's pretty clear that there's no parity between the kind of coffers of corporate America compared to the coffers of the diminishing cloud of unions.
Well, the Supreme Court did not premise its ruling in Citizens United on any idea about equality or parity. In fact, the court there rejected the idea, as it has more than once in the past, that leveling the playing field or achieving some kind of spending which is proportionate to people's views in society is a permissible interest under the First Amendment. Instead, what the court said in Citizens United is that the only basis upon which you can limit money in elections is to prevent corruption or the appearance of corruption. And the court made what I consider to be a questionable statement that independent spending, that is spending that's not coordinated with the candidate, can never corrupt politician or the political process. It's on that basis, the anti-corruption basis, that the court rejected these limits and changed the rules on the federal level and in many states and localities.
So is there a possibility, Richard Hassan, again, the Chancellor's Professor of Law and Political Science at the University of California, Irvine, and a nationally recognized expert in election law, is it possible we could, I know that this, the Montana case is before the Supreme Court, and there's some rumors, whether there's any foundation to them, that perhaps Justice Kennedy is having second thoughts about joining the majority opinion in Citizens United. One would think that just evidence from this recent Republican primary would be sufficient to address what you just said, how the court didn't see independent expenditure as a problem or as something that was akin to corruption. In the Republican primary, one individual, Sheldon Adelson, kept one candidate, Newt Gingrich, alive in the campaign, and he effectively split the anti-Romney vote and helped elect Romney. Whether that was deliberate on the part of Adelson or not, it just shows you that one person, one single individual, can literally manipulate an election.
I don't think that it's likely that the Supreme Court is going to use the Citizens United sequel out of Montana to reverse the decision It just just issued a couple of years ago. Certainly people are hoping for that. I actually think that if the court agrees to hear the case, which we may know as soon as the end of next week, the Supreme Court majority could actually make things worse. We already had an opinion last year involving public financing in a case that got a lot less attention than the Citizens United case, a case out of Arizona, where the court said that you couldn't give extra matching funds to a publicly financed candidate who faces a large outside campaign against him. And that was a way to try and militate a little bit of the effects of Citizens United. And again, on a 5-4 vote, the court struck that down and said that was impermissible. I think that if the court gets its hands on this Montana case and sets it for a full hearing, as opposed to just summarily reversing it and not hearing any case, that the court could well make things worse and shed some doubt on the constitutionality of limits on direct corporate contributions to candidates, which is so far something that has remained constitutional.
So what does this mean then, Richard Hassan? Does that this mean that the majority on the Supreme Court simply believe that that the power of money is unlimited and it's just too bad and any attempts to level the playing field are impermissible?
Well, the court has certainly said, the court majority has certainly said that attempts to level the playing field are impermissible. The question before the court is whether or not it wants to consider evidence that this outside money can be corrupting. So that's a different question than about equality and leveling the playing field. In Citizens United, Justice Kennedy, writing for the court, said that independent spending cannot corrupt and cannot create the appearance of corruption. Justice Ginsburg, in a special statement agreeing with the court to stay that Montana decision temporarily, said, we need to reexamine this corruption question in light of what's happened in the 2 years since Citizens United and the emergence of these super PACs. The question is whether the court would actually entertain evidence that could show that independent spending can corrupt. That's a different question than leveling the playing field, but it's an urgent question as well. I just think that this Supreme Court is unlikely to be willing to look at such evidence. And in fact, they've shown no second guessing or reluctance about their Citizens United opinion in the 2 years since it was issued. I actually think that they're actually quite happy with how things are going right now.
So Justice Stevens, in his dissent to Citizens United, was quite passionate and to my mind, was extremely cogent, warning about the effects that have come to pass. And he recently went public and castigated them. And that's, I don't think that's ever happened, has it? Has a former Supreme Court justice ever gone out and gone public and castigated his fellow justices?
Well, it's rare, but Justice O'Connor herself has said a little more subtly that she is not happy with Citizens United. She was, of course, the fifth justice in the majority that upheld the corporate spending rules when they were challenged back involving the McCain-Feingold law in 2003. But Justice Stevens has been going around giving speeches where he's really gone into detail, and he pointed out something which I've been saying for the last few years, that the Supreme Court has said it's created some kind of coherence in the law because now there are no spending limits at all for anyone, and it used to be that you could have corporate spending limits but not apply to media corporations and that this was inconsistent. Well, now the Supreme Court has said that it's fine to have spending limits when it comes to foreign individuals and foreign governments and foreign corporations, but not as to domestic individuals or corporations. And if you think about why that is, why the identity of the speaker should matter here, it's really in great tension with what the court said in Citizens United, that the First Amendment doesn't care who the speaker is not concerned about problems of the political process being distorted by lots of money. And so Justice Stevens has been out there saying these cases are in tension and eventually the Supreme Court's going to have to back off of Citizens United. I just think for that to happen, we're going to have a change in the Supreme Court's personnel. It's going to have to be a different five-justice majority to reverse that case.
Well, but if Mitt Romney becomes the next president, and there are two likely seats that may come up, then you'd have a 7-8 two-majority, conservative majority.
Well, that's right. And I've been saying that I'm surprised that President Obama has not been talking about the likelihood that you'd have Kennedy and Scalia, both of whom I believe will turn 80 during the next 4 years, agreeing to retire if the next president is Romney and not Obama. But the issue of judges doesn't seem to resonate as much on the left as it does on the right. And perhaps it will not get him any votes. But I do think that there's a danger of going from a wobbly 5-4 to a much stronger 5-4. And not to mention the possibility that someone like a Justice Ginsburg, who has been ill in the past and is older, might need to retire at some point during the next term, whether she would want to or not.
Well, the asymmetry, Richard Hassan, between the right and the left, and the right, of course, and it's worth noting that the judicial appointments advisor to Mitt Romney is none other than Robert Bork.
Well, the right has always had much more of an interest in the judiciary than the left.
Sure, and the left, of course, is a lot of people on the left basically think there's no difference between not a lot, but some people on the left think that there's no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, and it doesn't matter. obviously, following the 2000 election in Florida. That led to the appointment of both Alito and Roberts. And you mentioned earlier that Sandra Day O'Connor has been subtly critical. Of course, she was replaced by Alito, and it turns out in her case it was unnecessary in a way. She retired thinking that Rehnquist was going to she asked actually Rehnquist before she whether he was going to retire or she would, and he said, well, go ahead and retire because I'm not, and she went off to take care of her ailing husband, who subsequently sort of didn't recognize her because of Alzheimer's, and then lo and behold, Rehnquist dies, and you know, it's pretty clear that O'Connor could still be on the court.
It's true, and I wonder if she has regrets about not being on the court at this point, especially as she's seeing how, in a number of areas, the law is changing. It could not only be.
Sure.
Changing as to campaign finance, but it could as to voting rights as well and as to affirmative action. So there are all kinds of changes on the Supreme Court that have come and that are on the way.
But just in terms of the Supreme Court's idea that they limit their notion of corruption to foreign money, how in God's name can anybody guarantee that foreign money is not getting into an election if unlimited amounts of money are allowed, and particularly if they're allowed through the 501c4 tax exempt, not a tax exempt foundation, but through the nonprofit route, which disguises the donors. In the days of multinational corporations and electronic transfers at the tip of a finger, how could you guarantee that you're not getting foreign money pouring in?
I think that's a very legitimate question. And I suppose what the answer of the Supreme Court would be is that the court did nothing to prevent the passage of more effective campaign finance disclosure rules. And in fact, in Citizens United, Justice Kennedy extols the idea of having a fully open campaign finance system when it comes to money, but with instantaneous disclosure on the Internet. Well, we got half of what Justice Kennedy imagined in his world, the unlimited money, but not the disclosure. In the meantime, disclosure has become a partisan political issue, with Democrats and Republicans splitting in both Congress and in the Federal Election Commission, with the result being that anybody who wants to hide their identity while still trying to affect the outcome of elections and influence legislative members has the ability to do so. It's very easy if you want to give your money to help Republicans, instead of giving it to the super PAC American Crossroads run by Karl Rove, you give it to Crossroads GPS, which is their 501c4 affiliate, which allows for the hiding of the identity of these donors. And so far, neither the Federal Election Commission nor the Internal Revenue Service have shown much of an appetite for going after these groups for potentially violating both the Internal Revenue Code and the Federal Election Campaign Act.
So again, Richard Hassan, the Chancellor's Professor of Law and Political Science at the University of California, Irvine. He's a nationally recognized expert in election law and campaign finance regulation. Just back to the impact of Citizens United on the Wisconsin recall vote. According to Forbes magazine, 14 billionaires made contributions to Scott Walker, and only one of them lives in Wisconsin. That's a woman that we saw on the videotape asking Scott Walker to turn Wisconsin into a red state and to make it a right to work state. And of these 13 out of state billionaires, one was Christy Walton, the widow of the Walmart founder, and the Walton family can command $70 billion in wealth, which is the equivalent to the wealth of the entire bottom 30% of the United States people in the United States. That's 95 million people we're talking about. When you look at it that way, it makes you wonder what country the Supreme Court are comfortable about living in.
Well, I want to be clear that I don't believe that Citizens United funding was responsible for the Scott Walker victory.
Oh, I don't believe that either, by the way. I mean, there are a lot of other reasons, and the New York Times has a pretty good editorial about how the unions and labor failed miserably in this.
Right. So, but, you know, the real issue with this kind of spending in a high salience race like for the president or this Wisconsin recall is not that it's going to affect outcomes, because you're going to have both sides being able to get their message out and being able to be at least somewhat effective in getting the vote out and getting the message across. The bigger danger is that politicians are going to, one, feel the need to kowtow to the big contributors to these super PACs and to these groups. And second, they're going to fear that if they don't change their views and change their policies, they're going to be the next victims of this kind of outside spending against them, which could cause them to either change their positions directly or have to make compromises in order to raise the kind of funds from their allies, which they otherwise wouldn't do. And so the biggest problem with Citizens United, to me, is not its effect on electoral outcomes, but much more its effect on legislative outcomes and public policy.
Well, Richard Hassan, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
It's been a pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Richard Hassan, who's the Chancellor's Professor of Law and Political Science at the University of California, Irvine. He's a nationally recognized expert in election law and campaign finance regulation, and is the co-author of a leading casebook on election law. And from 2001 to 2010, he serves as a founding co-editor of the quarterly peer-reviewed publication Election Law Journal. And he's the author of more than 80 articles on election law issues published in numerous journals. And his newest book is The Voting Wars, From Florida 2000 to the Next Election Meltdown. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back with the filmmaker of a new film, Heist, Who Stole the American Dream?